Okay, good morning everybody. We're back to Mukta. I'm not sure if we'll finish it this week. If not, then we'll finish it next week. But we're almost at the end. The topic this week was moving Mukta, but just another prat or two before we get to that, to finish off what we were discussing, various side issues that come up with Mukta, and then we'll get on to moving Mukta. So the first thing I want to talk about is what we call Bitul Kli Mehechonai, now that is the right word, but to destroy a kli from its ability to be used. You have kelim that are not mukta, and if you put them into a situation where they cannot be used any longer on Shabbos, then there is a problem called bitul kli mechana. The achronim discuss what would be the problem, what did they do wrong. And there's two explanations that are exactly the opposing svar of each other. But there's two svaras given to explain what could be the issue in bitul kli mechana. There's two opposing opinions. One is that it is similar to boina. A person has done construction. Why? Because if you have a kli that you can move around the house, you can use it, you can do whatever you need with it, whether it's a kli shemunach leheter or kli shemunach leisur, but it is essentially something that can be moved. It wasn't totally mukta. Now you did something to it that made it totally mukta, so you've implanted it and made it to a certain extent. You've made it built in. You can't move it. You can't do anything with it anymore. And we treat it as if like you built it into the house for Shabbos. So it would be doime. It would be similar to the melecha of boina of building on Shabbos. And other achronim learn the exact opposite, that they consider it as a problem of soisa. Soisa is destruction. I had a very useful utensil around my house, even though it was sitting in the cupboard doing nothing, but it had use. And I went, and I now blocked its use. It's now useless because I cannot move it on Shabbos. So it's kilo. I've destroyed the kli. There's two different svaros given to explain bitul kli mechonoi. But the bottom line is that bitul kli mechonoi is also on Shabbos. So let's see what are examples of bitul kli mechonoi is when you have a utensil that may be used in Shabbos. And because of something you did to this utensil, it now has mukta placed on top of it. So now, not that it becomes a bosses, because we know a bosses, A, has to be done on purpose, and B, it has to be done before Ben Hashmashas and left there for the whole Ben Hashmashas. Here we're talking about that happened on Shabbos. So we said last week that mukta that was done on Shabbos does not create a situation of mukta for the whole Shabbos. You can remove and we'll go back to some status. But it falls in a way that you can't get rid of it. So then you cannot use this item anymore, and now this considers a bitul kli mechana. So an example would be, not so practical today where we have electric lighting, but it was very common. In olden days, the light came from oil. You had an oil candle, and you had the wick that came out. There was a spout on the side of the lamp. The wick stuck out the edge of the spout, and it drew the oil up into the wick, and that burned. And very often, some oil actually dripped down the side of the lamp. And if you had a suspended lamp, for example, that was suspended over the Shabbos table, you had an old-fashioned chandelier, multiple-branched candelabra, which had oil inside. So some of the oil would drip out of the container through the pulling of the oil up the wick and drip down and make a mess. And you don't want that oil to land on your table. So you take a bowl and you put the bowl underneath the candle and it catches the oil that drips. That oil, as we've said previously, is mukta. It was set aside to be burned for the light and therefore it is considered mukta. It's a total mukta. It's mukta machmas gufoi. There's no way to move this oil on Shabbos. And now you've got oil in this bowl. Now, sometimes you can do what's called nil. You can shake something off. If something landed on your table and you didn't want it, we're not talking about bosses. Yeah, someone put something mukta, your kids were playing, and they played with something mukta and they put it on your table. They put their Game Boy on your table on Shabbos and you now want to set the table. So you can't, so Game Boy could be, it's a separate problem, it could be it's an Eklisha Nachal Isur, and therefore you can move it to a Makoma. But let's say it was a very expensive one, which you might say is mukta machmas kesron kis. And therefore it's real mukta. So what you can do is you can tilt the table and let it slide down and go onto the floor, which is one way of being manayir. If it breaks, it's another problem. You could lift the tablecloth on all four corners and lower the tablecloth to the floor and then pull the tablecloth out from underneath the toy, whatever it is, whatever, in various cases, what's called manai. Manai is literally translated as to shake, but it means to remove the mukta item from on top of the item you want to use. But here there's a problem. That I can't spill the oil out. What's it going to do with it? It's going to end up on the table. I put the bowl on the table to catch the oil so it shouldn't mess up the table. What do? I then pour it out on the table. There's no point. Therefore, I cannot get rid of the oil. Therefore, it is considered as now the bowl is stuck with the oil inside it for the whole Shabbos. That is bitul klimei chomer. So it's a problem what to do if you have a dripping candle and you didn't prepare a bowl for Shabbos. One way of taking care of it is to, there is an interesting discussion in the Magen Avraham, he brings from a Ma'aril, that says that perhaps if you put the bowl under the table and then you remove the table, so that's possible that it might work. So there's a new discussion about that, but that's a whole shtick on how to get it to work. But essentially, let's just say that you cannot put a bowl under dripping oil because that's mevachakli mechonah. To put it under something that drips, that you can pour out of the bowl afterwards, there would be a heter. One should avoid it because we say that even bitul klei mechonah for a short amount of time should be avoided. But it's a possibility. So if you have a shash that some wax is going to fall or something like that, so then once the wax solidifies, you can actually, there's no problem of pouring it out. It might stick to the bowl, be a separate problem, but you can pour it out, it's not going to cause anything to become dirty. Another example of something where it's not a problem is if you have a candle that the wick is very long, and as the wick gets shorter, there's ash that's falling. The ash, sometimes when it falls, still has a bit of a spark in it. So you don't want it to land on the tablecloth or make a hole in the tablecloth. It's usually not a big enough fire that the tablecloth will catch fire, but you make a hole. You don't want that to happen, so you put a plate underneath. There we're going to say that it's more to put a plate underneath, because once the spark goes out, the ash is a double shemboi mamish. It doesn't really have much content that you can actually consider that this is something that makes the kli mukta. We ignore its existence because of its insignificance. What we do have to know on a side point is that if you have water in the plate, it would be awesome. Because if that piece of ash falls and is still burning, then by placing water underneath, that spark will extinguish as soon as it hits the water. And that's the problem of kibbutz and Shabbos. Even something which is going to go out, if the bowl of water was not there, it would drop another centimeter or two and it would hit the table. And when it hit the table, it would go out. So essentially, it's something that's not really burning and it's going out in another centimeter of falling, which is half a second later. Nevertheless, krav kibbutz, to bring something closer to going out, even if you haven't actually actively extinguished it, is also on Shabbos. And therefore, you cannot put a bowl of water. We will learn in the future, Metz Hashem, that if a person's home is on fire, Chas V'Shalom, or some item in his home is on fire, that you can place bowls of water around the fire so that when the fire reaches the bowls of water will burst open from the heat of the fire and the water will come out and then extinguish the fire. So you're going to tell me, how can you do that? So the difference is that when I light a candle, so everything that's part of the candle, the wick and the oil, is all set aside to burn. The moment I remove something that has been set aside for it to burn, that's already considered as Kuram Kibui, as causing it to be extinguished. It's going to shorten its life. It's going to go out. So if I have a bowl of oil where I have a candle burning and I take a teaspoon of that oil to use for my salad dressing, that is a problem of kibbutz and Shabbos. But if I have a Persian rug on my floor, I never intended that rug to be fuel for the local fire. And if the corner of the rug, Chas V'Shalom, catches fire, I don't say the rest of the rug is intended to be burnt. Therefore, when I stop in an indirect way the fire from going further, I haven't caused the gram kibbutz, I haven't taken away its fuel. I just haven't allowed it to find new fuel. That's how we're going to explain it, and therefore in that case it's different. But I just want to bring it in so we shouldn't be confused. For those who've heard of that halacha, that we can do that, there is a reason to explain the difference. But essentially, when you have a spark that falls out of a candle, you can catch it in a bowl, but you cannot have water in the bowl. Another example of mevachakli mechonai would be to, if you have condensation water that is coming out of your air conditioner. Generally speaking, something which didn't exist and now comes into existing on existence in Shabbos is Nolad. The typical example of Nolad is an egg. When a chicken lays an egg, we say that egg is Nolad and it's Muktzah for the duration of Shabbos. Most of Shabbos it's water. And we will discuss if you have water that was non-existence and now it exists, it's also considered Muktzah. Rain is not the case. We pass it that rain existed in the clouds and just comes down, and therefore rainwater is not mukta, but condensation water, even though from a physical point of view you're going to tell me what's the difference. Rain essentially, clouds are essentially a gathering of condensation which later will cause them to turn into precipitation. And why in an air conditioner where you're just taking the same water vapor and concentrating it over the coal grills and then gets concentrated and comes out, that's a sheer in itself, partly discussed how to deal with that, but essentially the halacha is that rain is considered as something that exists, but it's in the clouds and it comes down, whereas water vapor that we don't see, that's in the air, that gets condensed inside your air conditioner and comes out as water, is a problem of Noelad and Shabbos. Therefore, that water is Muktzah. So if you have a air conditioner and the water comes out, so generally speaking, your air conditioner installer technician has put in some sort of pipe and the pipe leads to somewhere and goes out. But, so usually it's not a problem, but sometimes that pipe gets blocked. The water backs up into the pan of the base of the air conditioner unit and then it overflows and you get a drip from your air conditioning unit that's hanging on the wall, or it's a built-in unit in your dropped ceiling, and now you've got water coming through the gebis, through the drywall paneling. That water that comes through is muktzah water. To take a kli and to place it under the water on Shabbos is mevatel kli mechana, because that muktzah is that water is muktzah, and now you're collecting muktzah water in a kli that was not muktzah, and now you can't move that kli around on Shabbos. There are eitzes for such cases, which would be to get the readers, it's discussed in halacha in a different circumstance, is if a person has a leak in his roof and there is non-potable water coming through his roof. For example, if the water is rain water, which essentially is considered drinkable, but because it's been sitting on the roof and it comes through a sealant layer which was made of mud, the water comes through, it's filthy. So then it depends whether an animal would drink that water or not. If the water would not even be drinkable for an animal, then that water is muktzah. So what do? Your house is going to get ruined. It's dripping through. What do you do? So here we're going to use a heter, which we'll get to later, for graf sharei. Graf sharei is literally translated as a bedpan. In other words, something which is as disgusting as a bedpan, we want to remove it from our homes on Shabbos. And therefore, Chazal said that muktzah doesn't apply to something which gets the status of a graf sharei. If you have the water dripping in a way that it is leaving a mess that disturbs you, then you would actually be able to remove it. So what you could do is allow the water to fill into a bucket. And then when it becomes gross and disgusting, then you can empty the bucket because it is gross and disgusting. However, the heter of graf sharei only applies to a place either where you're sleeping or you're eating, but not to general places all over the house. Not always is every area considered permissible to rely on the heter of graf sharei. So in that case, where the water is leaking through the ceiling, in that case it's called nalapa, so much so it says, when necessary, go put your bed next to the drip and then turn it into a graf sharei and that's it. Once you have a heter to empty the bucket, so then it's not considered bitul kli mechana. What I describe bitul kli mechana is that this bucket was usable. I could carry it around the house. Now I've got muktzah water and I've put this bucket out of use for the remainder of Shabbos. So that's considered bitul kli mechana. But if I find a way of a heter to empty it, so then I haven't destroyed its use for the duration of the whole Shabbos, then there would be a heter. The problem is that in our homes, it's not so clear that a water spill is going to be considered a graf sharei. You must remember, in the olden days, the sealant that they used in their ceilings and their roofs was made of mud. And that mud could then dissolve and come through as filthy, dirty water, and their floors were mud. So if water got into the house, then you didn't have a dry floor, you had a mud floor. That would be awful. Today we have covered floors that have tile, and there's no mud going to happen on the floor. So you don't really have this pattern of letting the water gather up in a bucket. What could be is perhaps you could use a sponge stick to move it into, say, into the nearest bathroom, which is also, or out into the patio. That's a possibility because we're going to discuss what's called tizum and atad, moving mukta with a non-direct movement where you don't actively hold the mukta, but you hold something which pushes the mukta. The problem is that what do you do with the water then when you get to the bathroom? Because the open up little hole that they have on the floor in Israeli bathrooms could also be a problem of soisa, because it's not, depending on what type it's made and whether it's screwed in or whether it's something you open regularly, it's a problem. But getting back to what we're discussing, it is a problem to put a usable utensil underneath something where mukta is going to fall into it, and then you mabata to mechana. I just thought of another eitza. If Novid writes, we'll get to this in a moment. Okay, when we get to this, we'll come back. Okay, I just thought of an eitza. Another example of mabata to mechana is if you have a chicken that's going to lay an egg. So you put a bowl to the chicken lays the egg into the bowl. That would be a typical case of catching mukta into the bowl, and you can't move the bowl anymore because it's in the mukta. That's bitterly mechonoi. What you can do, what is permissible on Shabbos, is to take a kli and cover the mukta. If you have an egg that was laid by a chicken, and you don't want the egg to be stepped on or moved or damaged in any way, you can take a bowl and upturn it and put it over the egg, as long as you don't end up touching the egg, because the egg will roll. And when you touch it, it will move. If you're not moving the egg, then you can cover it, even though there is an opinion of Mara that you don't take a usable cleat to protect something which is not usable, the mice will be passed in it, and therefore you can't take a bowl and cover mukta. Another example brought is if your kids are playing in the yard and there is something disgusting in the yard that you don't want them to touch, you can take a bowl and cover that item, and that is not a problem on Shabbos, as long as the item underneath is not going to be moved. Another example of is when a person is eating, you have bones, peels, pips, and all that type of stuff, that if they are not edible after all the good flesh and good food has been removed, and they're not edible to animals, or they're not edible to animals which are in our vicinity, which we said that if something which is edible to animals doesn't become mukta, but it's got to be edible to animals which are local, so something which is eaten by ostriches, would be mukta here in Ramat Beit Shemesh, where, as far as I know, we have no ostriches in the local population. But something which is eaten by dogs is not mukta. So chicken bones don't become mukta on that account. But perhaps fish bones do, although fish bones are eaten by cats, and we still have a fair amount of cats around here. The question is whether you're hired to feed them. But shells and peels and those type of things aren't eaten by animals. So if you have grapefruits, finished all the food inside the grapefruit and completed the flesh, and now just left with the shell. You've eaten garinim, and now you just got the shells. All those things become mukta. But one has to be careful what one does with them. If you put them onto a plate, that's mevatatli meyachana. And even though you can remove them from the plate by carrying the plate to the garbage and knocking it off, nevertheless, we try to avoid doing mevatatli meyachana for a short amount of time as well. And therefore, if you're going to be putting them on a plate, if you're eating garinim and you're going to put them down, or you're going to eat grapefruit and you leave the shell behind. So I imagine actually grapefruit eventually, if it's you're eating it off the plate, you're not putting it down somewhere, it just becomes that way. If you emptied it out, then you've done a problem. The problem is if you were to pick it up and put it down again, then you were holding it in your hand and then you put it down. Or you're peeling a clementina, a tangerine, and you're now wondering where to put the peels, so don't put them directly onto your plate. Unless there's other food on your plate. If there's other food on your plate, so the plate can be moved because of the fact that it has non-mukta as well as mukta, and then you can knock off the non-mukta. But what I did see over here, and this would be an eitza also, what I was thinking about earlier, about the air-conditioned water, is that if you use a utensil, which essentially is not mukta, but its purpose is to be thrown out, then there's no isur of bitul kli meichana. And therefore, if you're using a disposable, a single-use item, where after it's single use, it is still a good kli, you can wash it and reuse it. But we don't. it is designed to be disposed of, that's what we call them, disposable, then it doesn't get an issue of bitukli mechona. So if you do have a drip, I guess the answer would be to take a plastic bowl to catch the drip, and then you don't have a problem of bitukli mechona instead of using your sponge bucket. So too, if you've set out garinim on the table and put out disposable bowls to catch, for people to put the shells into, that would also be permissible on Shabbos. How are you going to get them off the table? That we'll get to, hopefully, either still today or next week. Okay, so that brings us to the end of Bitukim Mechonai. Expected, but all right. And one more issue of Muktzah before we get to what I wanted to be today's topic is Muktzah Machmas Mitzvah. Muktzah Machmas Mitzvah. When we started Hilchos Muktzah, I said that there's four types of Muktzah. There are four general types, I said, but there are quite a few others that we have encountered along the way. For example, we mentioned amongst the four, we did not mention Kli Shemelach Leheter. We spoke about it last week or 2 weeks ago. A Kli Shemelach Leheter essentially is a form of Muktzah, but it doesn't have restrictions. So therefore, it's usually not listed as a form of Muktzah. It just has a restriction that you can't move for no reason. There has to be some reason, even if it's for the sake of the Muktzah. If you have a Kli Shemelach Leheter that's in a place where it gets stolen or destroyed in the weather or something like that, you can bring it in. But to move it for no reason would be asur. That is also listed by the Achronim as a form of Muktzah. We didn't consider the one main, of the main categories. Another one of the cases, which is not too common, and therefore also not one of the main categories, but it's another form of Muktzah, is what we call Muktzah Machmas Mitzvah. Muktzah Machmas Mitzvah is something which, because we have set it aside for the use of a mitzvah, even during the week, we are limited to what we can do with such an item, so Shabbos it becomes Muktzah. So the typical and pretty much the only example that I've seen is Arba Minim and Sukkah. Not many other examples of it. Arba Minim are plants. Plants are not Muktzah when they are detached from the ground. You have a vase on the table with flowers, there's no problem of moving that vase around the Shabbos. There's even a discussion whether if the flowers fall out, you can put them back in the water. That all depends on whether they're opened up or not opened up. That's a separate story. And another, maybe in the next section, we'll discuss that. But plants essentially are not muktzah in and of themselves, especially not fruit that you can eat. But here you have a case where a palm branch, a hadas branch, an arava branch, and an esrog might get the status of muktzah. The reason for that is that because we've set them aside for their mitzvah use, that even during the week, there's a limit to what you can do with them. That is that smelling your hadas, we're going to restrict during Sukkot time because it is set aside for the mitzvah, not for smelling. And therefore, on Shabbos, we take it one step further and say that it becomes muktzah. Therefore, we're going to say that the three main arba minim, the lulav, the arava, and hadas, are muktzah totally on Shabbos. The esrog, one can smell it during the week, although there are a lot of possible say to avoid it, but you can smell it during the week because the main purpose of it is to be eaten. So we say once it's chuksel and it's lasa, then you cannot eat it. There is a discussion with the Gemara over one of the Amorai who took a bite of every day. How did you do such a thing? What happened to the kashrus of his esrog? It's an interesting case. We have to deal with sabra minim now. But essentially, an esrog is something that's to be eaten. So when we say that it's chuksel and it's lasa, it's set aside for its mitzvah, that means that you can't eat it. But the secondary use of smelling it remains mutter. So on Shabbos, we're going to say that one shouldn't smell one's esrog, but as far as I remember, the esrog is not considered mutter. You can move it around. You can move your esrog on Shabbos. You just can't eat it. So that would be something. So it's, as I said, it's basically to only apply to Sukkot time. The walls of your sukkah, the decorations of your sukkah are all considered things that are chutz mitzvasa. They're set aside for the purpose of its mitzvah, and even if in a regular Shabbos, they would be of a material, of a substance that would not be mukta. Nevertheless, that since they have been set aside for mitzvah, they are now mukta. Therefore, your decorations, even if they fall, never mind, you can't take them down, but even if they fall on their own, they are mukta on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and they're picked up on Chol HaMoed. You can pick them up and move them, but we cannot use them for your own personal private use until Yom Tov is over, unless you made a tshnayim before Yom Tov. That's a separate story. But and you can hang them back up again on Chol HaMoed, but you can't. Because of that, on Shabbos and Yom Tov, it is muktzah itself, something which normally would not be muktzah, but now that you've hung it up on the wall of your sukkah and set it up as a decoration, it is now considered muktzah. Another example, but not so much because of mitzvah, is a shofar. A shofar is another utensil that is for mitzvah. Here it will be the other way around, is that shofar is a utensil that one uses to make a sound, and there's a gvera on klei shir, and therefore you're not allowed to play an instrument on Shabbos, and therefore the instrument automatically become mukta. So your guitar, your violin, and your piano are mukta on Shabbos, even though there's no issur d'oraisa in playing these things on in the Rabbanon. Nevertheless, issur d'oraisa can create a status of mukta. The shofar should be, for the same reason, mukta, and it's a klishim barach del issur. So if you left your shofar on the table, you can take it off the table. The exception to the shofar is on Rosh Hashanah itself. Rosh Hashanah itself is a mitzvah to blow it. So then we will say that for the sake of the mitzvah, you're allowed to move it. But once you've finished doing the mitzvah and you have no more blowing to do, then it should be put away and not moved around unnecessarily. Generally, the pasuk refers to a shofar as klishim lach del issur, meaning it is a utensil which is used for davar asur. But if you have a heter use, you may, or you need its place, you may use. If someone has a very expensive shofar and he was very much big that no one should play with it or touch it and is very worried about it, so then it could be that it's total mukta and considered mukta machmas pesum kiss, and then if it was left on the table, then you could not remove it. So that is the two sections that I want to complete before I get to what I start for today. We only have about 3 minutes left, so at least I've just started, and Metashem will do it probably next week. Is how do you move mukta? Generally, we said the status of mukta. What is mukta? Mukta is something that you cannot move. So what does it mean to move mukta? First of all, we've said that touching mukta essentially is not part of the issue of mukta. One may touch mukta. One may not move mukta. Touching that leads to moving is also because you're worried about the subsequent movement. So if you touch something that's round, for example, an egg that you laid, which is mukta, and you touch it, and now it's going to roll. So then, that is also to touch an egg, because an egg is going to roll, it's going to move. But something which is not going to roll, there's no problem with touching it. Not only is it mukta to touch mukta, but you can even use mukta if it's not going to cause it to move. So, you want to go sit on a rock in the park. That rock doesn't have to be prepared before Shabbos to be non-mukta. You can go sit on the rock in the park without a problem. You want to put something on the roof of your car, you're walking past and you need to check something out of your pocket and you're holding a cup of coffee, you just put the coffee on the roof of the car and take it off again. You haven't moved the car, you've used it. Using mukta is permissible if it doesn't move it. So too, if you put your candlesticks on the table and you did not put your challah on it beforehand, so your table became a bosis, so you can't move your table around, but no problem of using it, you can have your meal on the table. The one exception to using mukta is when, by using it, you use it up. Say in English, it's going to be consumed. So then we would say, well, this asur, and where would you get such an example? In Yom Tov. Yom Tov, where you're allowed to make a fire, so you throw a log into the fire to burn, because you need to cook on it. That, there, you cannot use a mukta log. The log has to be a non-mukta log. You can't use this mukta, because then it's going to be consumed, and then the usage becomes asur. That essentially is touching mukta, moving mukta. The touching is permissible, and therefore not only touching, using. You can sit on a stone, you can put your, you can use a table that is mukta, etc. And run out of time. So in addition, next week we'll go through this and hopefully get to the end of this section. Wishing everybody a fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're all well.
Thank you. You too. Good week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.